I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Brought to you by 4Cast Boutique on Etsy. You guys know we love a ton of different fandoms. Song of Ice and Fire, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Wheel of Time, DC, Marvel, and more. Well, if you're looking for a birthday present, Christmas gift, you got to check out 4Cast Boutique on Etsy. Katie and Jordan have a big selection of stickers, earrings, keychains, art prints. They got bookmarks for the reds and the greens, so you can choose your allegiance or even go big and get a full-on hanging banner for your favorite Westeros house. Whatever you're into, you will find a perfect gift for nerds like us at 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. That's the number 4, cats with a K. And you can even use the code BTK10 to get a 10% discount on that for checking them out. So that's code is BTK10. Let's go. Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. Jimmy, my friend, here's a question. Great episode or greatest episode?
I absolutely adored this episode. Last week took the throne for my favorite of the series, and I'm going to have to rewatch this. But this is definitely either one or two for me. I thought it was paced so well. And I know that it was a little bit of a more dialogue heavy episode, and we were jumping back and forth between a lot of different conversations, but the way that it was paced in with some of those holy shit moments, I thought was just dope.
Yeah. You know, the last week we were saying, man, tension's building. Okay. Well, the tension's still building. All right. We're still in tension building mode, but it went from rising to it's about to explode. And
yeah,
seeing a little bit of the preview for next week, it's going to explode. It's just going to absolutely explode next week. So yeah, this to me was like peak Game of Thrones. This would fit right into, this was like a season 3, season 4, season 5, sort of like mid-season finale towards the end. I mean, I think you could stack it right up there. There were so many great things, not only in just the base level, but just small little details I noticed too that we can dive into.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, this is now we're with the cast. Like, this is the cast, right? Going forward, we don't have to worry about these big, longer time jumps where, like, kids will be growing up and such, as far as we know, at least, right? Unless if something gets crazily, you know, changed. So for me, I feel great about the casting. I really, really like Rhaenyra's kids. And then Aemon's first words out of his mouth just delivered. I mean, just absolutely.
Yeah.
Forget
Tyrion's. Ewan Mitchell is his name, and I'm all of the people I watch, like Grace Randolph Beyond the Trailer, and then Gray Area, our friend over there, she has the early screeners, and they all said the same thing where they're like, this is peak thing. And the one character they all said, like, you are gonna fall in love immediately with is Ewan Mitchell, who plays Aemond. And my God, he is just literally perfect.
He had a good weight on screen. That first line delivered after we see him best Kristen Cole. I was just like, okay, I'm sold on this character already. But we get that little, like, partial standoff with Daemon at the dinner scene, and I'm like, this is the Greens Daemon, right? Very much so. So, and also Rhaenys is all over this episode, acting her ass off, doing a great job. But to be honest, I think the MVP of this episode is without a doubt Viserys, Patty Constantine, acting.
Crushed it.
I mean, this guy deserves an award. I got to say, my favorite moment in the entire series so far, the show so far, is Viserys coming to take the throne from Otto, to listen to the dispute. I was yelling at my TV. I was like, Otto, get the hell out of there. Get the hell out of there. The king's here, baby.
And one of the details I noticed was when they were prepping him, the light of, like, the seven was shining on him. Mm. Did you notice that? It was coming through the window, coming through the, which I found interesting. And then, of course, they showed his model that he's building, which is, of course, in the intro. And there was, like, some smoke coming out of it. And
nice.
Then they had, like, the bells ringing, which I thought meant, like, oh, he's dead. Like earlier in the episode, but yeah, such a great job. And he's been fantastic this whole season. And, you know, one of the things is a lot of these characters, because there's been so many casting changes, you know, Millie Alcock as young Rhaenyra was amazing. And Emma D'Arcy is phenomenal
really well,
but they're playing essentially like two, you know, different age groups of the character. And Matt Smith has pretty much been the same Daemon throughout. Mm-hmm. But Patty Constantine has really had to change almost every episode in the way he plays this character, because he's like just getting more old and decrepit and angry, and then back up and phenomenal. And then he gets one last sort of final goodbye, really, right? He gets to at least because he gets out of there before the fighting happens. And Fire and Blood, we've always sort of thought that Alicent kills him, right? That she was in there reading with him, as it says, when he passed away. And totally different ending for it, but it was actually just he just slipped away. So his ending now is actually more like kind of good, right? He had this one final good moment, and then he just, you know, he's just old and gone, and he thinks he's telling Rhaenyra, like, you're the one. You're the one, and that is his final thing.
Yeah, and really, him coming and taking that throne from Otto shows that, like, the mystique of the Targaryens. Like, even if he was considered a weak king, he was conflicted through his whole rule. Him trying to make it up the steps, and then him looking over and it being Daemon to help him and crown him.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. I had a tear in my eye. This episode.
It's one of those things where sometimes we talk about, oh, you know, action, right? You know, we need you got to have all the action, and then, or we need like great dialogue. This episode did more, I felt like, than any other episode, and the whole show has done it well. A lot of shows don't really do this well. Just moments. They let the moment linger and happen, and they don't have to have talking. They don't have to have like crazy action. There were so many small things. You know, Ewan, what is his name again? Let me pull it back up here just so I get it right. Ewan Mitchell, who played Aemond, he barely spoke, but you could just feel the weight in every scene he was in with just his posture. He was like, but when they were bringing the pig out, he was just sitting there. Like, he's very like locked in, ready to go. And it was just so great. And then that moment of Damon helping him up, you know, he didn't really have to say anything, but you just show it. And with
putting the crown on the head was the,
this show is like, is like drinking a fine wine. You just say, it's like drinking a port. You just savor it and let it, you know.
Yeah, dude. And more so this episode than any of the others, because I, you know, we've been telling people, you know, the pace has been crazy, but they are going to slow down now. We are now going to get into more personal scenes that are going to have less time between them because of less time jumps, right? And I just think that this episode is a really good indicator of what we're going to be getting. And there were so many small things, like you said. Did you see the cobwebs on the mm-hmm. model? Right before mm-hmm. we actually see Viserys, who, by the way, looks terrible. I mean, we said every week.
But he actually looked worse than the Tales from the Crypt guy in today's episode. At least the Tales from the Crypt guy has two eyes.
Yeah, for real. And him taking off that mask and saying, "I want you to see me. Mm-hmm. I want you to see me for who I am." And I was God damn.
It was like watching The Dark Knight when Two-Face turns over for the first time in the hospital. And it's just like, literally, it's like the exact same thing. It was great,
dude. I was blown away by Patty Constantine this episode. And Viserys has to be now, you know, one of the best kings we've ever seen on the screen in Westeros. I would say, you know, I'm a big Mark Addy fan. I'm a big Robert Bobby B fan. I might be getting a Viserys spray painting back here soon, because just has absolutely delivered on it, on Viserys, and made it Viserys much better than he was in Fire and Blood. So,
what do we think about the new Aegon?
What an absolute shit!
So he's so perfect for this role, for the role he's about to play. We won't go really into spoilers, but I'll just say this: if you think, and I've said this before, but I know sometimes on iTunes we've been getting comments of saying we're spoiling too much. So, you know, I'll keep it dialed back a little bit here.
My wife also thinks so.
We spoil too much.
Yeah. She's like, I know what's coming now. Like,
okay. Well, the only thing else, just, you know, if you think Joffrey and Ramsay are bad, you just wait. That's, you know,
yeah. And just in general, some of the heinous stuff that takes place, you know, we've been kind of hyping it up, but like, I mean, we saw what happens whenever you call some kids some bastards and a princess a whore. Didn't go very well.
I was not expecting that.
I was not expecting that either.
I don't think that's in Fire and Blood, is it? I have to go back.
Not that I remember.
I don't remember it going down like that.
This is actually the first week I haven't reread the Fire and Blood section that I thought we'd be covering. So I'm a little shaky on some of the details, but I'm fairly certain that didn't happen. I will see in my reread, but
it was like, wow. And then he just stands there with the sword. Like, what?
Disarm him. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Wow. Not disarming anything.
I know. Now I'm blanking on all the, you know, wow, you really lost his head there. Yeah.
Whenever he was like, and there was some anticipation there, whether he were not, he was going to say bastards, right? And then he yells it. And I'm like, well, that's one way of going about this. But he was done. You know, I mean, he was cooked. Rhaenys, which, by the way, Rhaenys taking the deal. As soon as she walked away from that scene, my wife looks at me and she goes, she'd be stupid not to take that. I don't care how much she doesn't like Rhaenyra. And I was like, yeah, it seems like a pretty bad deal if she pretty bad plan if she doesn't take it. And then Rhaenys actually does. So I was kind of glad that Rhaenys takes the deal, because if not, I would have had to question her intelligence. I wonder if Rhaenys believes Rhaenyra, that she had nothing to do with Laenor's death. It just makes me wonder. And I also wonder, how is Corlys going to feel about Daemon slicing his brother's head in half?
Yeah, that's going to be big in the future. And I'm really, because this is like totally does not happen in all the books, I'm really starting to think that there's a reason they showed us last week that Laenor Velaryon is alive. I feel now that somebody's going to figure it out.
Well, Corlys is like kind of MIA and no one knows what he's doing. Maybe Corlys is out there finding Laenor. Who knows? It would be a little too soon to bring him back, I think. But
I don't know.
Yeah, definitely too soon, but I feel very certain that he is going to, somebody's going to figure it out, and that's going to help with, that's going to be used against Rhaenyra perhaps in legitimacy or anything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with that, and if they make any big changes from the source material. I'd be here for it. I thought Lanor's actor was excellent, and you could really get some drama out of that, I think. What about Rhaenys being there watching the body be put together or prepped, and says, you know, it's unfavorable to look upon the dead, and she's like, I don't think this stranger cares whether my eyes are open or not.
Right.
Damn, dude, that was cold. That was a cold line. I continue to just love seeing her on screen. She's so unreadable in a good way.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what House Velaryon does going forward, mm-hmm. because I feel like when Corlys comes back, there's going to be a split between him and Rhaenys.
Yeah, Rhaenys is definitely going to, she said she has to stand on her own.
Yeah, House Velaryon's role in the books, they've already gone so far sort of away from the route that they go. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do with them.
They also just feel way more important on the screen, don't they? Like, mm-hmm. I really believe in that house. And Driftmark, I'm so glad we keep seeing more of Driftmark, like the chair, everything. I think that's great. I will never get tired of seeing King's Landing, by the way. Like coming up to the gate. And isn't it a pretty surreal? You know, we watch 8 seasons of Game of Thrones and keep hearing about the Targaryens, Targaryens, Targaryens. It's still 8 episodes into this show. Like, sends me for a trip when I see all the Targaryen banners hanging around King's Landing, because I'm so used to a Game of Thrones show, right? And it's just like, wow, we really are like in history. And when Viserys, and I'm going to keep coming back to this moment because I just think it's the best, but when Viserys is making the walk to go take a seat, I felt like this is grand epic history. Like, I felt like this was real Westerosi history. And I can't speak highly enough of that moment. Like, that's one of my favorite moments in television right now. Like, that is
It's one of the best. It's by far one of the best moments in all of Game of Thrones that we've seen on screen. I mean, hands down.
It gave me chills, man. And you know, even more so than the big battles and the CGI and the dragons, it was that human moment of like a king past his prime coming to do his duty one last time. I'm a mark for that trope. Like, that is something that I love. I love seeing it explored. And Viserys, for all the crap everyone talks about him, for him to come and just deliver in those moments was amazing. And also, like, you know, all the intimate moments that he had, even with Allison towards the end, which we obviously need to talk about, but also like him seeing Rhaenyra and his grandchildren, like, it had a weight to it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. It did. No, it very much did, because this whole season we've been talking about Viserys and where would we actually rank him among the kings? Right. Yeah. He's no Maegor the Cruel. He's not Aegon the Fourth. He's not the Mad King. He's not as good as Prince Jaehaerys, who came before him, but he's really not bad.
Jaehaerys, I mean, he's not dope.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's not. Well, I don't know. Aegon the Conqueror's.
I mean, yeah, you know, you know,
but I mean, really, under his tenure as king, I mean, it's just kind of like the royal family, and then obviously a huge civil war is coming. But I think he's pretty good. I mean, most of the Targaryen kings are awful or bad. So I mean, just being decent is already like got you in the upper echelon.
Yeah, and the Baratheons didn't have a great showing. You know, the budget,
no
out of control.
Right.
So, I think he's definitely top five. I think he's a top fiver for sure. We need to do a ranking, by the way.
We should rank all that would be a very good one. We should do a ranking. There we go. We could do that. That could be a big Patreon episode.
But we're a little biased now, because we saw like Viserys in the books is nothing like this, right? Like we got like Viserys did this and he did that, and then blah, he did, you know.
Right.
The show has just expanded him so much. I mean,
he's so great. He's so phenomenal. Yeah, he's so good now.
And the final moments. What did you think about that? What did you think about him talking about the prince who was promised with Allison?
Well, it's great that they're really building this up, because that means it is going to be a big deal going forward, which is awesome because that means it's tying. And this time he specifically, you know, he said it last time too, but I felt like this time he didn't just talk about like the North. Mm-hmm. He's like, he called it the cold. Right. And he's saying Aegon, you know, the prince who was promised, and he's like Aegon's dream. And so now she's thinking, because he never said Aegon the Conqueror. I think she's thinking like my son, Aegon.
And he got introduced to another Aegon. Right. Earlier in the episode.
So now I guess the you know, is Alicent, you know, is Alicent thinking I need to make Aegon king, which she's already talked about. I need to make Aegon king because Viserys has this prophecy and it's my last thing for her. It almost feels like they are doing such a good job of making you like Alicent and not just make her seem like the books just make her seem like she's just a terrible human being from start to finish.
I thought she was very likable in this episode. She even gives the toast. Yep. I mean, man, I'll be honest. That feel good dinner scene did a lot for me. Like, I was like, guys, where was this at? But the family is so dysfunctional. Like, Helena's over there spouting nonsense underneath her breath. And then she's like, being a wife isn't so bad. Sometimes he forgets you. Sometimes he gets drunk and then he remembers you. And it's like, I'm just sitting there laughing because the whole family is just so messed up. Like, it's ridiculous at one point that all these people are sitting at the table with all their history. Even able to have a like somewhat peaceful dinner for 30 minutes is so impressive, but it's still weird to see them all there.
I'm going to pull up the picture here of Alicent in Fire and Blood. Just so for those of you guys who've only watched the show, like you can see, it's like she has, you know, resting bitch face, to say the least, right? I mean, it's just the way they portray her in the books. There's no possible way I feel like you could have any sort of sympathy for her.
And did you pull up the one from the feast where they're on each side?
They're on each side. Yeah, so, I'm pulling it up. Good. Every time I will say this, every time I've tried to go to the wiki after the episode, it's like
crashing.
It's crashing because everyone. I guess I can just do this. One moment here.
Someone said Viserys actor could win an Emmy. I agree. Paddy Constantine should definitely be nominated. I mean, there's a lot of people in the show could be nominated, but I really feel like Paddy Constantine's just like killing it. There's Alicent from the source material. She's not as nice.
No, although I will say, my God, I mean, this artwork was done, you know, like however, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it kind of looks like Olivia Cooke.
It's been 5 years now. It's been 5 years. And look at the pendant on her.
Has that been 5 years?
Yeah, because I think Fire and Blood came out in 2017, I think.
No, Fire and Blood came out in 2000. It came out just before season 8 or just after season 8?
It was November 20th, 2018.
Okay, so just before season 8.
Yeah, so it's been 4 years.
Right.
And they kept pretty true to it, didn't they?
They did, yeah. It's very accurate. And again, of course, we talked about a lot of that source material, whatever, has been around for
a long time,
since the 90s. But yeah, certainly, it's just interesting that this picture. I mean, I felt like they could have really done that. But here's the portrayal in Fire and Blood, and we just saw that scene essentially, and they're really pleasant towards each other.
Different tone.
Totally opposite of what Fire and Blood has going.
But their evil seeds have sown into their children, and now their children have irrefutable trauma. I mean, by the way, like, how traumatic are these kids' lives?
they're so screwed up.
This old dude get his head chopped in half.
It seems like it's actually not even going to be Alicent and Rhaenyra that kick the whole Dance of the Dragons off. It's going to be the kids.
And isn't that crazy?
Yes.
It's wild. And it is
so different.
To go back also to what you were saying about Alicent and like, where does she go with this Aegon prophecy? They did a lot of subtle, and not even that subtle really, but they talked about her religious, how religious she has become, right? She's starting to remove some of the Targaryen symbolism, put up things for the Seven and all these things. And I think that does play hand in hand with the idea of a prophecy, because she feels justified, maybe in a divine right, that she is doing things because she's righteous. So I think that there's like groundwork there for this prophecy to potentially dilute her and for her to really run with it. And also the fact that she loves her kids. Like, she loves them. Even Aegon, who definitely assaulted the serving maid, which was awful.
Right.
She said, you're no son of mine.
I thought,
I thought she was gonna kill her.
Dude, why did we have to see his cheeks? Like they moved the thing on like Aegon cheeks. Like, wow.
No, did you think that when she was talking to her? See, and that's the bias from the books.
That's right. You're right though.
You read the books and it's like Allison is just this terrible person. Like Cersei, or even worse than Cersei, is the way they portray her. And so I'm like, she's gonna have this girl killed, especially because last week, the last conversation we see is her and Otto, and Otto saying, "Okay, I think you're ready to do this." But then we get her, and she's still trying to walk the line of being right.
Yeah, when she's drinking, I thought for a second we were just gonna see like poison or poison. But you know, it's interesting. The handmaiden that was with the queen in that scene is the one we see run to Missaria after the dinner. Missaria's back.
I know. And we talked about this earlier. We said, is it going to be weird when she came back? I felt like it was good, but I do feel like people are going to be like, who's that again?
The casual viewers are going to go, huh?
Right.
Which means we need to make a video with a big red circle around her face and an arrow.
Who is Missaria? Yes. She also has not been explained.
Well, you better
in the show.
Perfect YouTube title.
There we go. Missaria explained. But I do feel like they haven't. All they is like, wasn't she that girl that was with Damon a little bit? And like, that's been it.
Yes, I agree with that. And I mean, there's going to be some bigger roles for her to play down the line. But so now I have to assume she might have that information that Aegon committed this act.
Yes.
This lady. I mean, this is the person that's trying to be crowned. I think we'll see that serving maid again.
Yeah. Missaria is, remember, for those of you guys who are pointing, like, who was that again? Exactly. I'm sure some people watch this episode, like, who is that lady in white? She is Daemon's sort of paramour from like 20 years ago at this point in the show, right? I guess it's like 10. You see her in episode 2. Remember when Damon says he's going to take her to wife and she's upset. And then he's also with her in episode 1 where he can't finish the job. And now she's back, and she will certainly have a role to play.
Yeah. And I think it could be really cool. I think they could expand a lot on her character in the show and have already changed some of the things that happen with her. So I think it's going to be neat. And I do believe that we'll see the serving maid again. I do. Cause that kind of information, yes. Like they showed us that scene for a reason. It's not just to show that Aegon's terrible and Allison is somewhat sympathetic and has morals. But I think, you know, maybe possibly down the line when people are making claims, maybe she'll get brought back up. I don't know. I think it could be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So where do you rank this episode?
It's either 1 or 2.
Where would you rank it? Where would you rank it all time?
All time. Well, that's a hard one. How about this? How about this? This
compare stack it against Game of Thrones.
This definitely had more of the pace of what we saw from like higher level episodes of Game of Thrones, especially in the first 4 seasons. Because like you said, like, you know, we didn't need all this big action. We didn't even need like the really amazing lines, though we got some. Like, it was enough to watch Viserys walk 15 feet to get me standing up off the couch saying, you know, F you, Otto. You know, get out of that seat, you piece of scum. I was fired up. So for me, I mean, this is like, you know, if you take all of Game of Thrones, it's been a while since I watched it, but I would put this in like that top half, right? Definitely. And for this show, my favorite vibes from an episode, my favorite pacing from an episode. And for those who, you know, are listening, I do enjoy dialogue heavy episodes. I tend to like those a little bit more than, say, Battle of the Bastards type things. Not that I don't like those. I love them. But I think that the dialogue episodes are really, really important to build to those points. And we still got some really cool stuff in this episode. So,
right. And there's still even bigger moments that will come in the future. And it's crazy to think this is also right. You know, again, this show benefits because we looked at this months ago, before the show started. And I remember looking at sort of, like I went through and I even looked at like production assistants, like people who do molds and embroidery and all this stuff. And a lot of those people worked on Game of Thrones. So from the production side of it, you think, you know, you go back to like season 1 of Game of Thrones. This is the first time they're working on like, okay, what does the Red Keep look like? What does the Stark leather look like? This, for a lot of these people who actually still worked on Game of Thrones, is season 9 for them, right? This is like the 9th year of them doing it, because a lot of these people worked on the whole thing.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, directors and all that other stuff, they're interchangeable. But a lot of time in Hollywood, the people who do like the special effects and the set building, all that stuff, they just kind of they bounce all over the place because they're not there as often. So this is season one of this show. So it's, I mean, you know, a bigger budget and more time to develop. And now these people are more attuned to the role and have chemistry working with each other. Like if this is season one, I can't even begin to fathom what, you know, like even better season two to three could be.
And not only that, I mean, you're 100% right, but think about all the hurdles that we had to come to get here. I mean, people, we were nervous about the time jump. We were nervous about the actors and actresses being switched out. We were nervous about there not being like a lot of fine details. Like a lot of stuff could have went wrong to this point. And maybe there was some stuff that maybe, you know, could have went a little bit better. But as an overall presentation and where we are right now, I'm invested. I'm really, really invested. And it kind of shows that the time jumps, even though they're not favorable, they did do what they were supposed to do. They got us to the dance, no pun intended.
And I've watched some of the behind the scenes stuff where they were talking about like the tourney, and they said one of the things that hurt them there, why they had to digitize as much as they did, was because COVID restrictions. Like, still, you know, they're definitely a lot more lenient now, and it seems like we're getting to the point to where we're, you know, no masks or any of that stuff is going to be the case here in the future. But you know, some of this stuff still, you think about like early production and all that stuff, was still impacted. You know, Jimmy, every holiday season, I find myself with a dilemma. At my wife's extended family Christmas, we do a white elephant gift, and I never know what to get.
Well, Matt, spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling.
Yeah, they scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their website. Things like chocolate from around the world, handcrafted cribbage boards, wine glasses, bourbon sets, just about anything you want to find that would be a unique or uncommon gift, they have in their selection.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts that you can personalize.
And from holiday host to hostess gift to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone, from book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can find just anywhere.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee. That's uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Hit by COVID, and we've seen other shows that sort of really seemed to suffer from that. Like Wheel of Time was a show. It's very obvious. You can see where COVID sort of impacted it. So to think that the next season of that will have even less of whatever impact it's caused
less
here.
Disruptions,
It's insane to think of how good this show is already.
Yeah, the ceiling is ridiculously high at this point. And I do believe that we're going to see some things on screen, especially in season two, that is like, I don't know. I'm so excited to see people who are going into this blind react to this. And I'm excited to see what they think of this episode. Like, we got that famous line from the book, you know, my cousins are strong. It's like, and I kind of looked over, because my wife is my barometer, right? She hasn't read the book. She's very much a casual fan. And I look over and she's, her mouth's open at that just little line delivery. And I'm like, she got it. You know,
there has been in the trailers, if you go back and you watch some of the trailers, there's dialogue that Viserys said they recorded for trailers or whatever, where it's like a younger Viserys saying, talking about like, do I choose my brother? Do I choose my son? Do I choose my daughter? So that never happened. We kind of thought maybe that would, but that never, that dialogue was never shown on screen.
I might have to get a Blu-ray player for all these deleted scenes.
Yeah, I know.
There's a lot of them from earlier in the show, right?
Yeah, the Viserys and Alicent wedding, they didn't show.
Lena in the dragon, we also didn't get to see that, but the Vhagar bonding. So there's going to be a lot of really cool deleted scenes, and it does make you wonder like what an extended season one would be like. But I'm really happy where we're at. I'm really, really happy with the cast, and I kind of like that everyone's, you know, grown up a bit too. I know that sounds weird, but like, I don't know. I said this last week, but it feels a little heavier now, and I like that.
Yeah, no, it does. And now I think we're pretty much done with time jumps. We might get some, it's going to be like 6 months or so, but really we're kind of diving into like the
we're here
sort of right. And I think the timing, I have to go look at it the year. Cause I think we were last episode was like 120 and this stuff is around 124. And then like everything sort of ends in like 130. So again, they can do whatever they want with that. So we may get like a little bit of a time jump, like, you know, when some battles.
Yeah, there's no worries about it
later.
Yeah.
Yeah. It won't feel weird because we're not dramatically shifting the cast around. Unless this goes the route of Game of Thrones, in which case we recast actors like every season.
Which does happen in television, right?
Right.
But
there were three people who played the Mountain. There Daria. Were two, Beric and Daria. Yeah, the Daria one is. The Daria one is the most
egregious.
It's just egregious and noticeable.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The one nice thing is that we know they're excellent at casting, because we're now gone through what, three changes, and all the cast for me has been hits. And in fact, you know, looking back, I really think the ones that we have right now are my favorites.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. This cast is so good. And I'm loving Emma D'Arcy as Rhaenyra. Although, you know, Millie Alcock was just so.
Yeah, she was so great good. Too. Emma D'Arcy really delivered this episode with more of a range. Like, let's see a softer side, even a couple cracked smiles. So Emma D'Arcy, hats off. I thought that the role was executed very, very well. Really, really happy. Really happy with Daemon chemistry as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt Smith, yeah, Rhaenyra, and Daemon's chemistry on screen is just it's so good. Have you been seeing, they've been doing, there's a lot of them. I see them on TikTok and YouTube Shorts, and there's now a meme blowing up because it's Olivia Cooke and Emma D'Arcy, and they're doing this sort of back and forth about like, you know, what did you get with the role? And it's like some drink where Emma D'Arcy, they're talking about their drink that they like to drink, and it's like taking over the internet like right now.
Yeah, they've done a lot of those like one-on-ones. Daemon's done them with other people as well, and they seem to be really, really popular. People like the cast, so that's good. You know, I'm not much.
Yeah, what was the name of this episode?
This was the King of the Sea. Let's see, episode 8, House of the Dragon. I've actually done a good job of knowing the titles because in Game of Thrones, I never, ever, ever cared. But let's see. Episode. I absolutely typed in episode 9 and there's already a million
theories, things.
It. Yeah.
Things people, for it.
Right. What are we, what is happening with the Civil War? This is so funny.
Here, I'll get this pulled up because it's a very cool,
someone called it Last Days, but I don't believe that is actually what it's called. This is easily the hardest I've ever had to look for the for the episode name. I bet someone's already said it in chat. Thank you, Lord of the Tides. Lauren, you are the MVP.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, I mean, right here. Thank you, Patty Considine, for being the absolute best king we could have ever asked for. I mean, just crushed it this season.
Crushed it.
So. And I'm really unfamiliar with him as an actor. I think he's in Peaky Blinders, maybe. Is that
he's in The Outsider, the Stephen King adaptation everyone hated for HBO that I thought was like at least okay. He did great in that.
But I totally want to see him in more stuff. Yeah. And he's so just phenomenal at playing a king. I want to get this guy in, you know. I mean, obviously he's gone now in in Westeros, but get this guy in, I don't know, The Witcher or Wheel of Time or Rings of Power, or
put him in some more Renfair attire.
Yeah, something, because he's just so good in this role.
It was really heartbreaking to see his last words, you know, be my no more, and then my love, and then you kind of hear the breathing stop. So I assume next episode, I didn't watch the next episode sneak peek, but I assume next episode we'll see.
The preview for next week was very fast paced, and I sort of, you know, I don't want to go really into super spoilers, just talk about what's in the preview for everyone who saw it, but it actually didn't go the way I thought. It's just sort of chaos, a lot of chaos,
bro,
running around, action, people attacking each other.
We talked about it though. Remember episode 9 historically in Westeros has been the climax episode, and the person who did episode 4, which I thought was phenomenal, is the same person that is doing episode 9, which I think bodes very, very well. So this is man, there's a good chance our biggest oh shit moments will come next week. And then 10 will be dealing with the fallout and setup. I mean, obviously there'll be some big stuff that happens in episode 10 as well, but it's going to be interesting. I cannot believe there's only 2 episodes left of this season, Matt.
What? Oh, wow. I'm just trying to think. Yeah. What are the episode 9s? So obviously Ned Stark's death in Game of Thrones is one of them. I believe Battle of the Blackwater is season 3's. It's either season 2 season or season 2.
Blackwater season 2 episode 9.
Episode 9. Isn't the battle at Castle Black a season in episode 9?
I believe so. Reigns of Castamere, which is Red Wedding, is also that. Let's see, Battle at the Wall.
I think another one is Battle of the Bastards, I believe, is season 6, episode 9.
Yeah, I believe that is correct as well. Yeah, so if we keep in tune, which I think they're going to, I think next week is going to be Pandemonium.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah. And great. And good point. It's brutal.
Great comment here. The fact that I have to wait for another season is brutal. Yes. Yes, it is. It's so insane that we have to wait for another one. Just some more comments here. Damon is kind of fading. He did. I mean, obviously he had a huge moment.
Yeah, it was pretty big
today, but he has taken. I don't know. He did take a little bit more of a backseat. It did feel like earlier on the it was very, very focused on him, mm-hmm. and he's had moments in these last few. When Damon was like chuckling at something.
Oh, the prayers.
The prayers. Yeah, they're like praying, and he's just like laughing. It's like, oh my god, dude, he's so savage.
Yeah, and I actually disagree, Jason. I think that he's actually had pretty good development in this episode, because seeing him crown Viserys, to me, is right. Like the best moment so far of the season. So I think that shows that sympathetic side of Damon a lot more. Especially
his dialogue has been toned back, to be fair.
Yeah, for sure. And they're not going to be able to focus on people every single episode, because even though it's a tighter show as far as like the scope goes, there's still a lot of people that they got to get around. We didn't see Larys at all. This episode, what's he up to?
Yeah, we didn't see him. He is in the preview for next week. Mm-hmm. And Viserys actually has been sort of taking a backseat for the past few episodes. I mean, he's been there, but
and then this was his episode.
This was sort of his episode for sure.
Yeah, the crowning of Viserys taking the throne, like, is like, I can't stress enough, as you all know now.
What did you think of the Phantom of the Opera mask he was rocking today?
I thought a crab beater, like half, like immediately.
Right, because I'd seen the pictures from it, but it was just kind of cool, because there's nothing in the books about that, about him having to wear some sort of mask because his face is deteriorating.
I mean, He was grotesque. I mean, somehow the mask was almost as frightening for me than when he took it off, which is weird. Also, I just kept thinking about the mechanics of, like, how does he chew and have food in his mouth when he has a big hole?
I mean, it's straight up Harvey Dent. I mean, let me pull up Two-Face from, you know, from The Dark Knight. Cause it is, I mean, I was like, boom, that is just immediately.
Somebody said that Patty is the Ice King or the Night King. God, I hope not. What if they make
that? Like,
oh, that'd be terrible.
Yeah, like right here. Let me get this pulled up here. I don't know. It's on somebody's Tom or Pinterest or something, but like right there. Like, so when he turn in The Dark Knight, when he turns his face over and you see it's mm-hmm. Two-Face for the first time. I mean, especially like the jaw's gone and everything. I was like, yeah. It's just so much what it reminded me of. Same, you know, same, totally the same energy. Of course, obviously in that movie, he's, you know, like a supervillain, and it's sort of the other way around here, where you're supposed to feel terrible for him.
Yeah. TK had a pretty cool comment here. Said, I love that his mask was on the same side of his face as the high towers and greens in the dinner, showing the fake and real sides of the family. Hey, some would argue that Rhaenyra's side's fake.
There we go. And the way they're portraying Allison gives you some cause to sort of believe her and feel sorry for her. And that's something I'm interested in. And I'm interested to see what the chat thinks too, is especially for any of you who've read Fire and Blood or any of the histories, because they're doing a very, very good job of, I mean, they're going a totally different route with Allison.
Yeah. Do you believe, so obviously Rhaenyra says, you know, I'll see my kids back to Dragonstone and then I'll return on Dragonback. And Allison says, me and the king would both like that very much. Did you feel like Allison was being genuine in that moment? Cause yes. I did. Yeah.
Yes, me too. I did.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, I did. Now I'm beginning to question Fire and Blood, because the funny part about that is that it's written by a maester who is favorable to Allison.
Hey, you know, Mushroom throws in some digs too, you know.
I didn't really feel like Allison or Rhaenyra, if you're viewing this from either side, felt like an aggressor. It really felt like, wow, everything up top is finally coming together and it's all the kids that are going to go mess everything up.
Yeah, the trauma that they put on their kids early in the season is going to come to bite them, you know, in the ass. And then you do have to wonder, like, again, with Allison becoming very religious and feeling like she is so righteous, and then getting, you know, Viserys talking about Aegon and all these things. Like, I just wonder what the tipping point for her is. Is it that? Is she going to go full ham on that? Or is it going to also be Otto? Because I don't think Otto dug any of this. Otto hated everyone this episode. He was just pissed. Though he did smile at the dinner, and I thought it was creepy.
He didn't really have, he only had a handful of lines in this episode, but again, another thing where they cut to the facial expressions and he, you know, crushed it for his role. We didn't get very much Kristen Cole. This episode really was all about Aemon. I felt like, for me, I mean, it's Viserys's like final episode.
It's his episode.
But I felt like they were very much gearing this towards, oh, here's Aemon and here's why he's going to be a big deal going forward. I mean, he is just staring down those kids all night.
Yeah, and that subtle standoff with Daemon was very important. Very, very important. I would agree with that. I think they established the kids really well, especially Rhaenyra's kids were established more so. I know that, you know, when I got the Valyrian speaking lessons, and then we got them at the dinner and stuff. But even here, I felt like they were a little bit more solidified than they were in the past episodes. I need more dialogue from Otto Hightower, though. I think that actor is tremendous, and I really want to see him, like, I want to see an Otto-focused episode, possibly. I think that would be really cool.
I think that's probably coming next week. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that we only have two episodes left, and we have two episodes left. Episode 9 is typically the bigger one. So my guess is that next week is pure chaos and nothing. My guess is that next week nothing really happens. It's gonna feel like something big is gonna happen, but at the end of the day, nothing big is really gonna happen. And episode 10 ends with somebody getting crowned.
So you feel like they are not going to follow the typical climax in episode 9?
I just feel like the final shot of this season is going to be somebody going to be sitting on the Iron Throne. It's like, that's how it ends. It's like somebody sits on the Iron Throne and then that's like the camera's right on their face.
Hmm.
And then it's like, oh my God, I can't wait. Cause now it feels like all hell just broke loose.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's a great final shot as well. I'm just wondering how they could ever spread it out to where,
or that could be the end of episode, the next episode. And then
yeah,
the final one, just because I will say it now, spoiler territory for anyone watching or listening. So you feel free to tune out because we kind of need to go into spoilers a little bit here just to talk about it. So you have been warned. This whole deal is a Targaryen civil war, and it all stems from the death of King Viserys, which we just saw, and the war over the throne. Alicent's side and Rhaenyra's side is what this whole deal is about. So what do you do in like a final episode? Because I guess I'm trying to think here. So Ned Stark dies in episode 9 of Game of Thrones. I guess episode 10, Robb Stark gets crowned king in the North.
Yeah, you're going to see like a major event, I think, in episode 9. And you could still do the crowning episode 10. So it's this very big symbolic like climax and has a bridge to the next season. But I think we're going to see some wild stuff. Because remember, like the dance hasn't actually kicked off yet. You know what I mean? So I feel like there's still some fireworks to be had before we get the crowning moment.
Right. See, I almost thought that it would end with Daemon before the series started. I almost thought it would end with Daemon and Rhaenyra getting married. And that might be because before we knew how far they were going to go, like, cause we thought Viserys might exist until season 2. I always thought that would be a good place to end season 1, because then it was like, okay, now these two are joining forces. Like, oh my God, things are going to get real serious.
Yeah.
So I always thought that would just be a good place to end it. Now I just kind of don't know, unless we sort of have the tournament in which you officially have like the blacks and the greens, but that's just not like, I don't know. That's just not to me super, super cool. It's hard to compare it to Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones season 1 ends, and a lot of the seasons you have everybody in so many different areas that you can kind of just be like, now we're going to focus on this person's huge epic story. So like season 1 ends with Daenerys and the dragons. Season 2 ends with them ranging beyond the wall, maybe. I'm trying to remember. I know one of the seasons ends with Arya getting on the boat and going to Braavos. Of course, season 6 ends with Jon Snow being crowned king in the North. Like that's like the final shot of like that whole season, which is my single favorite moment in all of Game of Thrones. So season 7 ends with Jon and Daenerys on the boat, and it's like, oh my God, they're together. That hooks up. So there's so many things, but this story is so less spread out. I just don't really know where you do it. You almost have to show each side, and you have to do like a back and forth or something.
Well, one moment you could save for the end of the season is, assuming Corlys is okay, Corlys coming back. That could be a major moment.
You could have Corlys. Yeah, Corlys Velaryon comes back.
Yeah.
Do you do something with Laenor Velaryon? Maybe we show somebody over there finding him, because that's like such a big deal now that he's still alive.
Yeah, I can see them maybe doing it. I feel like I would hope that it wouldn't be him arriving back or something like that, because it'd be
I don't think they'd do that. I think it could be somebody in Essos finding him.
Yeah. Yeah, or him in Essos getting word.
Do we maybe show a dragon hatching?
Ooh, that could be cool. Also, what about Daemon grabbing the dragon egg? I know it's such a small scene, but it was really cool.
Oh yeah, that was super cool. Such a cool scene. Do we at all show anything in the North and this threat of that they talked about, or is it just something we know exists?
I think it's an undercurrent. I don't think we'll see anything from it. I doubt it. Yeah, I don't think so.
Right, okay. Right now, I'm actually working on a video, and we can do a bigger theory on it at some point. Do and this is kind of an offshoot, but just to bring it up, will we at all see a three-eyed raven in this show? Will there be any alludes to it or anything?
Yeah, I think so. Because they're having way too many good conversations in front of the Weirwood. Like Rhaenys and Rhaenyra have that conversation in the Weirwood. Like every episode, the Weirwood has been talked in front of almost. That is going to matter a lot, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is, of course, is and the theory I'm sort of working on here is just, it's a show only theory because, of course, it's Brendan Rivers in the book. So it's Blood Raven, who isn't born yet. But in the show, Game of Thrones, they never at all say who he is. They never. There is no alluding to him being a Targaryen, Blood Raven, Brendan Rivers, any of that stuff. So in theory, it could be like the same guy if you wanted to go down that route.
Yeah, they could do a show only version where it's the same guy. They absolutely could do it.
So I'm just interested because they have shown us a lot of stuff in front of Weirwoods. They've, again, talked about this threat from the north and the prophecy. And the big deal is, and that's why this prophecy is such a huge deal, is it comes up. It now causes me to go back, and we should do a big mega breakdown on this, to go look at so many of the other events that happen from now until Game of Thrones that this Targaryen thing gets passed down from, and now we can sort of view it and realize it because they've brought it up so much.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised. I thought maybe we'd get a bit of it at the end of the season, but like it was mentioned twice in this episode, and it's obviously something Rhaenyra has thought about, which is important, I think. And now Alicent also has the secret, right? I mean, she kind of knew about it anyways, but like now she feels like she is also personally involved. So like they're not going to have both sides have that knowledge and then not use that as a focus point later. So I think that we could absolutely get some Weirwood creepiness, three-eyed raven stuff possibly. And then it would likely just be into the show only canon hat, which is cool. I think it's fine. I think it's obvious that they were going to connect it to the best rated, I shouldn't say rated, but the best grossing show of all time. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, anything else, Jimmy? Anything else we want to dive into other than just gush about how great this episode was?
I will say, and thank you to MyUB25. I don't know who this is in chat. I can't say your name, but it says, you guys noticed beware of the beast beneath the boards comment from Helena. I know she whispered something, but I wasn't sure what she whispered. I didn't have closed captioning on. So beware of the beast beneath the boards. You know, a video that me and Matt might have to do is break down every single whisper Helena has this season and then maybe start trying to make some guesses because some of them have already kind of came to fruition within their own episode. But there's some that I feel like could maybe have multiple meanings, which in A Song of Ice and Fire, usually that can happen. So
and I will still say one of the best things about this show is that it has opened the floodgates in the books. To be entirely honest, like I sort of thought we were going to go into this and we're like, we know what happens. We know what's going to go on. You know, like we have the outline. We know this ends. It's going to be easy for us. Yeah. It has raised far more questions about the books than I ever thought it would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which and is awesome.
It honestly makes Fire and Blood better.
Oh, it definitely does.
Yeah.
It definitely does. So, okay. Awesome. Well, with that, guys, thank you guys for watching. I'll get the podcast up here shortly. Jim and I will have coming back, obviously, next week. You may have to squeeze in a Patreon episode or something this week if you're free, Jimmy.
Absolutely.
We can certainly knock that out. Yeah, and I have some theories and stuff, that are some TikTok content as well. You can check that out and YouTube Shorts and all that stuff. So certainly stay tuned for that. So with that, guys, as always, thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned for all the more content. Be sure to go check out Jimmy's channel, The Fantasy Network, because you're doing sort of bigger episode breakdowns in the middle of the week. So I think you do that Wednesdays.
Yeah, usually it's Wednesday night right around 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, maybe sometimes 8:45. But, you know, at night on Wednesdays, I just go in and kind of get a lot of chat interaction for sure. So,
yeah, absolutely. So definitely go check that out. And guys, we will be back. So as always, want to thank you guys. And remember that winter is coming.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.